Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. And for those of you joining us live, it's a special edition, I guess. It's not a special edition in terms of the weekly show, but it's on a different evening than usual. Usually we do Wednesday evenings, and we're a little bit earlier on Tuesday evening this week. So still, even though it's a couple days into the week only, there's a lot of news. We will touch on that. The NFL Combine is in the rearview mirror now, and there's a lot to take away from that multiple-day event. A lot of big numbers and showings by some exciting players there. We will talk about that and some possibilities for the Cincinnati Bengals on this week's episode. We may have a special guest at the end of the show to talk about the NFL Combine, who was there. It's Edward Valentine with SBNation.com. He runs the SB Nation New York regional site. We're hoping to get him on towards the end of the show. We're going to try and get to some listener questions. All of that is on tap tonight. In case you're new to the show, you can get the show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get it on the Megaphone platform. All of our stuff is on CincyJungle.com. And, of course, our videos are on YouTube. All of our episodes videos are on YouTube. So subscribe to our channels, download the audio content, and get the show how you can. As usual, I am joined by my co-host, John Sheeran. John, before I go on a rant to start the program, how are you doing, sir? I told you before we kicked off, this has been a hell of a week for me personally, but I hope your week's going a little better than mine.
Maybe a hell of a week for you. It's probably a crazy week for those down in New Orleans. It's Mardi Gras today, but for us tourists who can't make it, it's just Fat Tuesday. I'm celebrating by enjoying my second sleeve of Thin Mints. I know you're the one who creates the questions of the week, but I'll create my own. What is your favorite Girl Scout cookie?
Oh man, that is a great question. Well, what you're mowing right now is those are amazing.
Can't go wrong with Thin Mints.
Yeah, I mean those are just amazing. And right now, you know, you're killing me because the wife and I have been doing this keto diet thing for a handful of months, and while it's done well for me in terms of losing, you know, shedding some extra weight and all that kind of stuff. You know, sitting here seeing you wolf down a sleeve of Thin Mints.
You're a better man than me.
Well, you're a thinner man than me. So that's the difference between, God, what are you, 20, 21, 22?
I'll take 22.
Okay. And 36, my friend. I go to the gym a lot, but the diet plays into it. I will say Thin Mints, but also the those peanut butter, the chocolate peanut butter ones. You pop those in the freezer too. Those are pretty damn tasty.
The freezer is an underrated aspect. I didn't adopt that strategy until later in my life. I wish I did earlier though, because it's magical.
Yeah, and you know what's also pretty solid to do with Thin Mints? Break a few of those up and pop them in a bowl of vanilla ice cream and just kind of mix it around in there.
See, I should have done this today because it's Fat Tuesday. I got to fast tomorrow.
I know.
That's stupid Catholic values.
And what's funny is I'm not a guy who has a sweet tooth normally, but now that I can't really have any of it, you're sitting here making me salivate. Anyway, question of the night. Yeah, it's a good question of the night. John asks, what's your go-to Girl Scout cookie? It is Girl Scout cookie season along with Lent season. So maybe you're giving up Girl Scout cookies for Lent.
Yeah, I got to finish this other box before midnight. For sure. That's a great thing to give up.
That's right. That's right. Nick Mark says caramel delights. So, you know, we'll see some other responses. Leave them in the live YouTube chat. Leave them in the Cincy Jungle comment thread. Leave them. Get them to us via Twitter at BengalsOBI. Get to us. We'd love to hear back from you about Girl Scout cookies because Hey, and our old co-host, Scott Schulze, I don't know if you remember, John, he also had a big sweet tooth. He was a guy that talked about dessert a lot. So you're right in his wheelhouse here with this question. You know, I mentioned I want to start the show kind of with a rant, and I'm not totally sure exactly which direction, all kinds of directions I'm going to take this, but I think, unfortunately, and I hate to be the negative guy because I put up stuff on cincyjungle.com, you know, our mailbag stuff and some opinion pieces about, you know, kind of trying not to be so cynical about Zach Taylor's stuff with this coaching staff, how we had to go down the pecking order a little bit. And I you know, commenters are very strong in their opinions that get that, you know, basically saying I'm bitching about stuff. Fine, whatever. This is something I think most Bengals fans can agree to be upset about, and that's the Andrew Whitworth situation. In case you're, for some reason, you haven't heard about this, Andrew Whitworth's wife recently spoke to a publication. I believe it was it in New Orleans or was it in Louisiana?
I think it was.
It was like a women's publication, I believe, down there, and talked about the free agency process that Andrew Whitworth went through a few years back, basically after the 2016 season. You know, you can find it on the internet, check it out. Basically, there was a very terse exchange, and it was, you know, basically Andrew Whitworth wanted to stay with the Cincinnati Bengals, may even have been willing to take a little bit less money to be able to stay there, just wanted to be valued, and the Bengals lowballed him. And, you know, he was kind of shocked, and then all of a sudden went to the Rams, and guess what? He's playing some of the best football of his career over the past couple of years. So here's the thing with this, and there are so many directions I want to take this. I obviously want to get your thoughts on this too, John, before we dive into other topics as well. But I get a little – I try not to get too upset about it because really when I think about this, this is pretty much how I envision that conversation between the two parties going anyway. But to see it in writing from his wife, and to see it kind of play out publicly, it hurts. And there are, aside from, yes, there's business decisions to make and you don't want to make poor business decisions based, you know, you want to think with your head, not always with your heart, but there is value in paying some guys that are team leaders. Maybe there is a slight decline in play. There's value in paying some of those guys and keeping those around. It sends a message to the locker room, all that kind of stuff. And the Bengals decided not to do that. Oh, by the way, since he's been gone on the team, it's been two more really poor losing seasons directly correlated with poor offensive line play. So there are reasons for the Bengals to say, yeah, we needed to move on. They drafted Cedric Abuehi in the first round. They drafted Jake Fisher. They needed to see what they got out of those guys. I get it. But this should have been a no-brainer thing to keep him as a Bengal. There are a couple of repercussions here. Undoubtedly, current Bengals read about this or knew about it based on their relationship with Whitworth. That has to affect them when it comes time for extension talks. There's also the facet of outside free agents. Andrew Whitworth goes to the Rams. We're going to talk about some recently released Rams guys who might be fits for the Bengals here in free agency coming up here. Obviously, those guys hear things, read things. That paints a picture for the Cincinnati Bengals in free agency and what they don't do, what they don't pay, what they don't value. This really is upsetting, and I guess it's because this is just not the way a lot of teams operate. A lot of teams do shed contracts of aging veterans. Sure, they let him walk. Sure, it's tough. Peyton Manning, you know, the Colts did it with Peyton Manning after so many years. I get it. But the Colts won championships, have won championships. They have created a culture of winning. The Cincinnati Bengals have not. And you lose these types of guys all of a sudden. And you saw a bunch of Bengals fans root for Whitworth to win a Super Bowl because he didn't get that opportunity here in Cincinnati. And a lot of guys here will probably not get that opportunity during their careers. This is just a frustrating aspect. It's frustrating from the standpoint of what the Bengals don't do and don't pay in free agency. It's frustrating in that they definitely hurt their team, not only by undervaluing him, but not even bothering to basically extend an offer to Kevin Zeitler, ruining their offensive line for years to come. Then they rely on the draft. A lot of high draft picks don't pan out. It was a perfect storm of a lot of issues. I'm concerned, John, aside from being upset about it, I'm concerned about the fact that, yeah, this is, you know, basically three off seasons ago now. Did they learn their lesson? I mean, have they learned their lesson? Have they, is this new coach now going to be able to somehow pull some more money out of the pocketbook? Is this a thing where that stings them and they say, wow, we just really shouldn't have let that happen, never again? Or are they going to keep doing the same thing and drive us nuts? Their reputation has to be damaged even further than probably it already has in free agency, I would think.
Well, that was just the most damning move that could have possibly happened. That, if that didn't, you know, hurt the reputation, nothing ever will, because it was so monumentally poor and horrid in every sense of the word. Because ultimately, it was a failure in the process, and it was just their process. And every team has a process of evaluating their own talent at the end of the season, and then they come, and if those certain players are up for new contracts, then they, you know, do whatever they do to input a certain valuation on that player. Anybody with a brain and two eyes could have told you that Whitworth wasn't in any sort of decline, and the Bengals were basically betting on him declining sooner than he naturally was going to, which was, again, an error in just their overall process. And I guess, did they learn their lesson? I think it's just, did they affect their overall evaluation process, I guess. And I think there's also the factors of drafting two offensive linemen, two offensive tackles a couple years beforehand to eventually replace him, and essentially the valuing Whitworth at a lower price than what he was worth is essentially double downing on your bets on Aboye and Fisher, failing miserably on that, and then watching Whitworth eventually become an All-Pro in Los Angeles. But I don't think that the Whitworth fiasco changes anything going forward with how they spend money. I think that they still have a process, and I think with the Blackburns and Duke Tobin still being there, I think they still believe in that's the process. But when you talk about, you know, how this could affect, you know, free agents going forward and their own talent signing going forward, there's a process that, you know, the Patriots don't do anything that dissimilar, because they let go, you know, certain talent every year. They trade talent for draft capital, and they watch guys get big contracts on other teams, and they end up going fine. But they already have a system in place that, you know, they can bring in talent, and they can, you know, adjust their system accordingly for the talent that they bring in. The Bengals don't have their reputation. They don't have that precedent set with, you know, around the league. And so players would naturally be more cautious in adopting and buying into the Bengals system and their process of team building. So I think that definitely is a negative factor to consider. But it's also a wonder of, you know, just because Whitworth, you know, played them like a fool and made them look like fools, I don't know if that's so much to completely for their sake, not from my opinion about what they should do, just for about what I think has impacted them. I don't think it's to the point where they would completely blow up their whole process, because as we know, they're pretty stubborn in how they do this. And obviously with Taylor and Tobin kind of establishing what we think is good chemistry going forward, maybe that process adjusts a little bit because Taylor's more exposed to a more a process of be more open to spend on not only your own, but on outside talent as well. I think there could be some potential changes there, but I think this was just a severe miss in their process and in their methodology. And I'm not sure how much it changes going forward.
I don't know if keeping Andrew Whitworth after 2016 would have been a cure-all to what we've seen over the past, the 2 years, basically two accrued seasons since he's been gone. Right. I mean, I don't know that. I definitely don't think it could have been worse. And I look at a situation like last off season where the Bengals had to scramble, make a trade, move around, get Cordy Glenn. Yeah. Decent tackle. You know, he had a decent season with the team, not Andrew Whitworth type of season, but a decent season. You look at that, and then the Bengals move back and they get Billy Price. And Billy Price is a guy that, had his major share of ups and downs, missed time, all that kind of stuff. So I guess you look at it and you go, okay, if they had kept Whitworth, then you look at last offseason, and then you don't potentially reach for a Billy Price. Maybe you get Frank Ragnow instead. Maybe you draft Tremaine Edmonds at the linebacker position, who had a pretty decent statistical season with the Buffalo Bills. And you, and that way you're not scrambling to fill multiple needs all the time because your offensive line is a mess because you let one of your best offensive linemen you have ever had walk out of the room. And it's just, it's a poor business decision that was a result of them thinking it was a good business decision.
Right.
And that's where I sit here and I just go, what are you doing? And who is pulling these strings? The message and the talking back and forth was with Troy Blackburn. I don't want to say it was just him that's, you know, the root of this problem or what have you, but you know, I don't want to spend all episode talking about this, but it is worth noting. It is disheartening. And yes, it's older news in terms of when it happened, but it's newer news in terms of it kind of the dirty laundry being aired. And it's pretty disheartening. We wanted to address it. And hey, Whitworth's a Ram. He's had a good stint there. I don't know what's ahead for him. He is coming back this year. He didn't announce his retirement, which I believe is the final year of his deal, if I remember correctly. But Bengals just put themselves in a big hole, both PR-wise and as a performing team with him gone. So very disheartening. And you know, best of luck to Andrew Whitworth. He's a great guy. I've met him. You know, great guy, great football player. Bad decision by the Bengals, and not a good look for them as we head into free agency. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Cheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. We've got a lot more on tap. We are going to try and get to listener questions as we usually do. Kind of depends on how the rest of the episode plays out here. We are trying to get Edward Valentine on the program towards the end here. We'll see if we get him. If we do not, then we'll probably have a little bit of time for some listener questions that we will address, and we'll give you the number in just a little bit to call or text in. You can get this show on iTunes. You can get it on Stitcher. You can get it on Google Play. You can get it on the Megaphone platform. You can also get this program on CincyJungle.com and on our YouTube channel.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com. Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Oh, wow. I took the worst time to take a bite out of a Thin Mint. So, as you said...
Does it taste good, at least?
It does. It tastes amazing. As you said, free agency is beginning in a week. The Bengals did get a compensatory pick for letting Andrew Whitworth go. They got a fifth rounder because he was old, and that's kind of how that process works. So, yeah. Yay. I don't even know. I don't even remember what they did with that fifth round pick. I think they draft... What did they draft? Jake Elliott?
That would just be the ultimate.
I thought it was a fifth round pick from 2017. It might have been Elliott. If it wasn't him, it was that center from Utah who's not here anymore. But anyways, Bengals have 3 6-round compensatory picks for their inactiveness and free agency. But that's kind of that's always been the thing in the Marvin Lewis era, right? It's, you know, valuing compensatory picks, so it's more draft picks for basically not spending money. It's like the golden ticket for the Bengals. So using that logic, we don't know if anything is really going to change with Zach Taylor. They could be still bargain hunting for guys who are not on the team anymore, who have become free agents, not because they were set to become, but they have been cut unexpectedly for creating cap space by other teams. In the past couple days, there's been a lot of guys who have been cut. And there's actually there's a good number of names here that I think could make a difference for the Bengals in just a complimentary or a rotational role. And me and Anthony are going to give some of our most favorite names out of this list. So I'm going to start with a guy who was actually cut a couple weeks ago by the NFC or almost NFC champion Saints, the Alex Okafor, edge rusher from the New Orleans Saints. He was I think, declined a team option back in early February. He had about, I think it was like a $4.5 million cap hit going in. He was a rotational edge rusher for the Saints. They drafted Marcus Davenport. They traded up for Marcus Davenport during last year's draft. I think they want to kind of implement him as the full-time starter and, you know, use Okafor savings in someplace else. So I think Okafor still has value as a rotational edge, and I think that's pretty much exactly what the Bengals need to be in the market for, because odds are Michael Johnson's not coming back. To bring him back would probably be to give him a raise, and he's just not worth it at this point for playing 300, 400 snaps. But besides, you know, Carlos Dunlap, Sam Hubbard, Carl Lawson coming off of a torn ACL, Jordan Willis. That's kind of all you have at edge right now, and I think they need to add someone else in case Lawson doesn't come back from the ACL 100%. And at the top of the draft, there's a lot of edge talent, but I think as you look towards like the mid rounds, the depth kind of gets a little murkier, if you will. So I think signing a guy like Okafor, who again wouldn't dig into your compensatory picks for a couple $1 million a year, basically the money that you would be paying Michael Johnson to bring him back to kind of fill in that rotational role, that rotate within with guys like Hubbard and Willis, still fairly young. I think he's going to be in his late 20s, but still provides a decent spark as a pass rusher. And it's kind of like an all around solid edge player. And other than Okafor, I think another guy who could be worth taking a look at would be Timmy Jernigan, who also had his player option declined from the Eagles. I think they saved about $7 million against the cap. They're doing a lot to basically open some cap room because they eventually need to extend Carson Wentz. And I think they're almost negative in the red in terms of cap space. But Jernigan, I think, is a guy who provides legitimate pass rush as a three technique, which is something that the Bengals still don't have, even with Ryan Glasgow hopefully coming back from the ACL. But defense tackle is another position where, you know, you look at the depth at what the Bengals have in the position, you think there's promising potential there, but there's not rock solid depth that you would be comfortable with if players went down. That's kind of what we saw last year when they had to get Niles Scott and Christian Ringo off the streets. And Jernigan, he's going to be, I think, his late 20s, maybe even 30 years old this year. Again, provides a decent pass rush presence for a couple $1 million a year for a 1 or 2 year deal. I think that he would be a decent option. So Anthony, who are some guys that you think would provide some value in terms of guys who got cut recently?
Well, I like Jernigan. He's coming off an injury. He's actually young, man. He doesn't turn 27 until September. So he's pretty young. Okafor just turned 28. Okafor to me, just, you know, he's hovered around that 4 to 5 sack mark in his career. He had one season with 8. To me, you know, unless he's kind of affordable and he's good with, you know, being a rotational guy, that's someone that is just kind of a meh to me. Jernigan would be a good one, especially, and I say this with the utmost respect to Geno Atkins, but there were times where there were some dry spells there last year, even with the double-digit sack marks. He was kind of a feast or famine guy, and you have to know that 3 of those 10 sacks he had last year were against the Raiders, against backup interior offensive linemen that Oakland put out there. So I'm not downplaying what he did necessarily, but why I'm saying this is because I would not be opposed to the Bengals bringing in someone to kind of give them a spell a little bit or be more multiple up front. Kind of the, you know, Jernigan is the sub 300-pound guy. He's not the, you know, the big old school run stuffing defensive tackle. He's the guy that can kind of penetrate and kind of create some havoc back there. And, you know, the Rams defense, they kind of had 2 guys that you have Aaron Donald, who we all know can get to the passer all the time. And you have Ndamukong Suh, who kind of can do it all a little bit, but he is a pass rushing defensive tackle as well. So, you know, maybe the Bengals could be a little bit more diverse up front, you know, with the Billings, Atkins, Jernigan type of rotation. Jernigan is coming off of a season where he only played 3 games, though. He was hurt. So that's,
probably why he got his option declined.
Right. So, you know, that's something to take into account. But productive player. Obviously, he came from the Ravens, so knows the AFC North well. That is a guy I think would be a very good signing, open up the draft for you. We kicked around a few other names. I believe I saw that Mark Barron was he not picked up?
He was released.
He's going to be released. He's going to be released. So, and that's a guy. You know, a lot of people are saying Landon Collins. This is a guy who does the hybrid-ish.
He's a linebacker.
He's a linebacker, but you remember he was a safety when he came out, and he was not doing so great as a safety. He transitioned, but he is a guy who does some things in space. He was a kind of a big part of the Rams transition and what they kind of do on defense. I think he's kind of a poor man's Landon Collins in terms of what he can do and familiarity with the Rams scheme, probably similar. There's going to be some similarities here to what was run in Los Angeles. You get him cheaper. He is older, but you get him cheaper, and he doesn't count against that compensatory formula. That former first round pick, high pick, that to me just screams Bengals all over the place, especially if he's affordable. Maybe you get him on a rental type of deal. So that to me is a guy. I see some other guys. You know, before we got on the air here, we talked about Eric Weddle. I don't really see a fit there. John Sullivan, the center for the Rams. I mean, there's some dots to connect there, but he is older. The Bengals just drafted Billy Price. I know a lot of people want to see Price move to guard. I don't know that that's in the cards there. So to me, Sullivan would be nice, I suppose, but I just don't see that happening. The one that I think could be valuable on a number of different fronts is Dwayne Allen, the tight end who was just released by the Patriots. Valuable because he's a blocker. He can do a little bit in the passing game, but comes from a world champion organization. So he's used to winning and winning pretty recently. So the Bengals have four tight ends that are set to hit the open market. I'm not saying Dwayne Allen is Tyler Eifert. I'm not saying he's CJ Uzomah. I'm not saying anything like that because he is not. But he is a guy that can help your offense in a couple of different facets, especially blocking. The Bengals last year kind of lacked a guy like that. I think if you get a couple of the pass-catching types of tight ends, you also get the more of the guy who's the inline blocker. That can help things. We saw Joe Mixon have to create a lot on his own. So having another inline blocker up front in a tight end and maybe a quick little outlet for the occasional pass. I think of Reggie Kelly, right? Reggie Kelly was a guy that was kept around here for a long time, never put up the big stats, but was a great locker room guy, a guy who was used to winning and a guy who was incredibly well-respected, did the dirty work. And I think Allen is a guy like that. You can get him cheap and he could probably fill a couple of niches for you, open up the draft a little bit there. So those are a couple of guys that I look at.
Not available yet, but rumored to eventually be available, Justin Houston. Now, you talked about Geno Atkins. You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to have a more diverse rotation in there. And I think that's a great point to make because, Atkins' production wasn't great last year. And I think that's a large part because they were down so early and he didn't have a lot of prime pass rushing opportunities that he used to have when the Bengals could score points. And I think a similar logic could be applied towards Carlos Dunlap, where it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if you had a more fluid and healthy rotation in with your star pass rushers to eventually make them more effective in their production and whatnot. And I think Houston would provide value there as well. And not only that, but Houston obviously was a tremendous athlete back in his heyday when he had those 20 plus sacks. Obviously wasn't worth the cap hit that he was going against Kansas City. I think it was near 19 to 21 million or so. So it made sense for him to be cut, but he wasn't as bad as I think a lot of people assumed that he was back in 2010. I think it was still per Pro Football Focus a top 10 overall pass rusher per their grades. Didn't have the production to really mirror that grade, but I think he was still getting to the quarterback on a consistent basis in terms of hurries and whatnot. And again, with what I envision, you know, the Bengals kind of need from the defensive line, they just need a couple more pieces to just kind of make that rotation a little bit better because you like the potential there with Lawson and Hubbard and maybe even guys like Lasko and A.J. Brown if they can develop, but I think they still need bodies to get a more healthier rotation because it wouldn't be in the worst thing in the world if both Dunlap and Atkins saw a slight decrease in their snaps to kind of keep them more fresh. And I think that Houston would not only provide that, but he would also provide some solid veteran leadership to guys like Hubbard, to guys like Lawson, to guys like Willis, who, especially Willis, who definitely needs it at this stage in the game. He's going into his third year and hasn't shown anything. But, you know, if they want to go long term with Lawson, I think he could learn some a thing or two from a guy like Houston. And again, he's not technically available yet, but it's basically in the cards. He's going to be on the market for a trade, and if they can't get a trade, then he's going to get cut because they can't swallow that cap. So if he does get cut, and if they can't get him for a reasonable mid-level value, I think Houston would be an ideal guy to go for as well.
By the way, Justin Houston, if he is released based on position, what he does, where he's at in his career, all this kind of stuff, doesn't he just scream New England Patriots signing? That's exactly what I thought about when you mentioned his name. But I agree with everything you're saying in terms of his value to the Bengals. I think that would be a good name. And I think also big name Pro Bowl player at the end of his career, more affordable. And he has that, oh, hey, you know, we got this guy in our free agency period, you know, and it's just kind of the player profile that the Bengals look at in free agency. I look at what you're talking about, the huge year in 2014 where he had 22 sacks, dipped the next year, 7.5 sacks, just 30 tackles, 4 sacks in 2016, just 21 tackles. But the last 2 years, John, 18.5 sacks combined. I mean, that's not terrible.
No, it's not.
And I think where he maybe faltered a bit more last year, 9 sacks last year, the tackles from he had 59 total tackles in 2017 and 37 last year. So I think maybe a little less impact in you know, the run game, a little less impactful plays from that standpoint. But hey, I mean, it's not like you see this dip from 2014 into 2015 and 16 where he only had 11.5 sacks after that 22 sack season, but then he comes back with another 18.5 sacks the next two seasons. So it's not like the valley hit right now. He kind of was riding back up a little bit. I don't think he's ever going to be,
no,
you know, anywhere near that 22 sack mark, but he could be a guy that could sniff double digit sack numbers with a team, even as a rotational player. I'd be interested, especially if it's a rental deal, if it is affordable. Unfortunately for Houston, given, you know, the fact he's been on some pretty good Chiefs teams, and that he's had a good career, he's probably going to be looking for a team that he can buy into the fact that they are going to be winning, and that they're going to be paying him pretty well. So I don't know if either of those typify the Bengals at this point. Maybe.
It's easy to go from the Bengals to the Rams. It's hard to go from the Chiefs, who are basically contending for the AFC for the next 10 years, to the team that's not the Chiefs. So
right,
that makes
right.
sense.
Right.
The but, Patriots yeah. in position to sign Houston and trade for Josh Rosen. I don't even know why we're talking about this now.
Interesting here, and I think if I'll have to look at his contract, but Mohamed Alomer in the YouTube chat says, what about Ndamukong Suh? We mentioned his name earlier, but
is he available?
I think he was on a one-year deal with I'll have to look at that. I think he was on a one-year deal with the
– He is, yeah.
Yeah, so he's
– That's the most quiet free agent. Like, I've heard nothing about him in this process.
He's kind of doing the Darrell Revis thing, you know? I mean, he's bouncing around, getting a big payday, and then leveraging it into potentially something else. That makes sense, again, the Rams connection, all that kind of stuff. That would make sense on a number of levels. What do you think?
Yeah, I think because he was getting $14 million on the cap, and it was, again, a one-year deal, so it was like a prove-it deal. He was still really good. Like, he wasn't – obviously, when you're playing with Aaron Donald, you're going to be the second best, you know, in terms of production, in terms of attention. But Spotrek has been projected getting a three-year deal worth about $9 million, and it's probably a little bit out of the Bengals' price range in that sense. But in terms of just a signing that could definitely, you know, take what the Rams' defense went from 2017 to 2018 – the Bengals could see, at least in terms of the defensive line, they could see, you know, a similar impact in terms of that sense, because, you know, people were afraid that Sue, who's going to play nose tackle if you have 2-3 techniques? I mean, Sue can line up in the A gap, he can line up in the B gap, he can line up in the C gap. He's still, even at 32 years old, he's still a tremendous athlete and a tremendous pass rusher. Maybe not too comfortable with 3 years unless, you know, it's more front loaded and get that guaranteed money out of the way early. But that's a name I'd be interested in. I'd be interested in seeing how he handles this process, because the Rams, I guess, are in the process of clearing out space. If they, you know, let go of both Sullivan and Barron, maybe they're making a push to bring him back, because, you know, they still have this window that they believe they can win. They still have McVay and they still have Goff on that that rookie contract. So maybe he's back with them, but, you know, maybe he goes to a similar situation where he gets to play with a guy like Geno Atkins. But probably going to be a little bit too much guaranteed money, because I think he still believes that he's at the peak of his career, and I think that might take him out of the Bengals market.
One last one before we move on that I saw, John, is CJ Mosley. I mean, I think everybody would say to me, that would be a great get, because it not only strengthens greatly your weakest position group, but it weakens your division foe.
Yeah, it's killing two birds with one stone. But I think we're over here just hoping that this transition means that the Bengals are going to be looking into actually signing mid-level veterans. As soon as we get to that stage, maybe then we can concern ourselves with signing a guy like CJ Mosley, who's again going to probably set the market for linebackers, and he deserves to, because he's that good and he has been good for the Ravens for quite some time now. He's a player that I was very interested in drafting back in 2014, and he's obviously lived up to that billing. But yeah, I think he's still too unrealistic for what we know about the Bengals. Yeah. And in the process right now, it would obviously be great, but I think the Ravens are going to be heavy spenders in free agency. It would be shocking to me if they let CJ Mosley go.
Yeah. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. We might be joined in just a few minutes by Edward Valentine of SB Nation. And he's the director of the New York SB Nation site, covering all New York sports, but he was at the NFL Combine. He's going to talk to us about that. We're going to hear some of our thoughts from John here in just a second about the Combine. But you can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can also get the show on the Megaphone platform, as well as on CincyJungle.com, and always you can join us on YouTube. You can join the live recordings of the show on YouTube every week that we do that, and get the show how you can.
Right. So,
did you need another Thin Mint?
I was thinking about it. Like, do I have time to do this? Nope. You stop talking. All right. So, yeah, the Combine just ended yesterday. The DBs worked out. I didn't really pay attention to them. I was more focused on the first 3 days, because that's kind of more aligned with what the Bengals need. And, you know, free agency hasn't happened yet, so the Bengals still have major needs at both offensive tackle and linebacker. And thankfully, there were quite a few names that showed out in both those positions, specifically with the linebackers. Because if you watched those linebackers run on Sunday and then you watched the cornerbacks run on Monday, you're thinking – the linebacker group is faster than this cornerback group. And that's, and honestly, it's a testament to how smaller linebackers are kind of getting. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a sign of how the game is kind of evolving in that sense. And it was great to see those linebackers run so well, but there was also a couple tackles that ran and tested well and did some drills well. So I'll start with that. The consensus number one tackle in this class is Jonah Williams. And quite honestly, his testing numbers weren't very great for his size at just 304 pounds. But with Williams, you know, he might not have been the guy that was always going to test well, but watching him in the drills was very important to me, just to see how well his biomechanics were just up close. And because you can see him on film that he just has a natural feel for the position. And those drills were just a terrific showcase for his ability in terms of kick sliding, in terms of getting out of pulls. You could just see he just kind of has an innate feel for just playing offensive tackle. And, you know, the 33 and a half inch arms helps his case, you know, because that passes that imaginary threshold for evaluators to stay on the outside. But I think he still looked great in the drills. And I think that kind of passed my overall test. He ran well, at least, and speed is important for tackles. So that was good for him. But the guys he's competing with for offensive tackle one, Juwan Taylor and Andre Dillard. Taylor is going to be your prototypical gap scheme right tackle, while Dillard is more of that zone blocking, athletic, explosive tackle that, you know, what was like the best case scenario for Cedric Oboi. With Taylor, I think he said he was down 50 pounds compared to what he was a couple months ago. He was down to 312 pounds, and he looked extremely light in drills. He didn't run or do any like a time testing or any jumps or anything like that, but he looked really fluid in those drills. And I don't know if that was because of that extreme loss weight, but regardless, I think he helped his stock because of that. And with Dillard, he tested as the best offensive tackle in this class. And, you know, similar to Colden Miller last year for UCLA, he blew away the the combine and ended up getting drafted in the first round. I think that's going to happen to Dillard in a similar fashion where, you know, he may not be a first-round tackle on tape, but he has first-round testing ability. And you just got to hope that wherever he goes, that people get the most out of, you know, what base that he has in terms of the pass protector, because if you can figure that out, he's probably going to have that high-quality potential. But if the Bengals don't take a tackle in the first round, there's a couple guys that I really liked in terms of that second or third arm range. That's Titus Howard and Max Sharping. Both are small school guys, but both tested very well for their size. They both were at least 320 pounds. They ran fast 40s. They had some good jumps. And again, speed, explosion are the two traits athletically that you look for in offensive tackles. And they tested very well, and they kind of confirmed what you can see on tape with them. You know, they also have a good base and a good feel for pass protection. They just need a little bit more refinement. But if you have something that you can work off of and not have to rework everything, then you have something good for in terms of a long-term investment. So offensive tackles, I think overall it was a solid weekend for them. And for the Bengals, if they don't find a starter right tackle, I think they can find someone in the first 50 or 70 picks that can maybe start early in the careers for them. And then when you look at linebackers, the two Devins really stood out, right? Because Devin White, Devin Bush, both tested in the 90th percentile in speed, explosion, flexibility, checked off every box. I think White, you know, interviewed extremely well. He's one of the four guys that NFL media are, you know, saying that, you know, blew it away on the whiteboard in terms of just overall leadership qualities. But, you know, Devin Bush, man, like, people were talking about him being maybe there in that second round pick for the Bengals, and that's just not going to happen anymore. And I think we all owe an apology to Jeff Hobson, who mocked Devin Bush to the Bengals in the first round. You're thinking this is a reach. Why the heck would they take him that early? But I mean, he tested just as well, if not better, than Devin White, and he has also high quality production at Michigan. So I think both are firmly in that top 16 conversation. White probably won't make it out of the top 10, and if White's gone and Bush is still there at 11, I think the Bengals have to seriously consider him. But again, if they ignore the linebacker position in round one, the two guys that I think are should be firmly in that top 100 conversation are Blake Cashman and Drew Tranquil. Now, Cashman is a linebacker from Minnesota who tested kind of just behind where White and Bush both were. But he's one of those guys where, you know, you see how well he tested, and you're thinking, I've never heard of this guy before. And then you look on his tape and you're thinking, yeah, that athleticism shows up everywhere. You know, against Big Ten competition, he was extremely productive, and every part of the athleticism showed. And, you know, he wasn't a guy that a lot of people knew about, but he's probably going to be drafted in that second or third round range. And Tranquil was a Notre Dame safety converted to linebacker. He was also pretty productive. He's more of on the older side, but being that converted safety, he has that explosion and that natural speed that you would expect a defensive back to have. And he might not be as big as, you know, the traditional linebackers go and whatnot, but in terms of open field ability, downfield ability to get downhill and to fill those gaps, I think he has great ability in that sense, even for lack of size. So I think for the two biggest positions in terms of need that the Bengals have, you know, ignoring what they do in free agency, I think there are athletic targets who also have production in terms of linebackers that can fill, you know, that can potentially make a difference for the Bengals early on.
So you had Jonah Williams as your number one tackle. Is that what you said?
Jonah's one right now, and I don't think he's going to move.
You don't think he's going to move?
No.
Okay. The reason I ask is because he, you know, I had a particular eye on him in the national championship game, and he did not do well against that vaunted Clemson line.
He had a few bad reps against Farrell. I'll give him that.
Yeah. That kind of stood out to me, and I was going, whoa, because obviously he was a name that in early mock drafts that was linked to the Bengals quite often. So, you know, I look at that, but you know, I think that group had a good showing. Like you said, the linebackers had a good showing. My God, the wide receivers and the tight ends, man, they just exploded the place. And especially for tight end, that is a need for the Bengals, at least at some level. I don't think it's one at number 11 overall, but it is probably in discussion night two You know, I think that's got to be in the discussion depending on what happens with those four aforementioned tight ends that are set to hit the market. But Noah Fant, Hawkinson, a slew of others tested very well at the position. There's probably going to be guys on day three, rounds four, five, and six that probably will end up contributing for teams on a decent level. So that stuck out to me. The question I want to ask you, John, with all of the wide receivers testing well. Now, you know, all of a sudden DK Metcalf was the combine darling early because he ran, you know, incredibly well. He jumped, all that kind of stuff. And when it came to lateral movement and all that stuff, he did not test well. But, I mean, some of the scores were just astronomical, as were with other wide receiver groups. I just wonder, again, I don't know if I want to say it's necessarily at 11, but, you know, we're saying, hey, maybe fourth round, maybe fifth round, the Bengals start stockpiling some wide receivers. Who knows? Maybe even third round. I mean, should we be talking higher for the Bengals at wide receiver based on, number one, the talent, some of the talent in this draft. Number two, A.J. Green's getting older and coming off of some injuries. John Ross appears to be staying in Cincinnati, but who knows if that rumor is ever going to fully go away. Tyler Boyd is entering the last year of his contract, and then you've got a lot of guys behind them who are question marks. So I don't know, man. I mean, is this something that the Bengals, hey, you know, maybe they address either a starting linebacker spot or offensive line spot in free agency, and then do the other at number 11, all of a sudden at the top of round two, one of these guys that's pretty explosive comes around. What do you do?
Right, and I think it's never a bad thing to attack a position that's strong in any draft class. And I love how the combine is a week before free agency, and then you have the, you know, position groups like receiver, like tight end, like linebacker blow everybody away, and then you're thinking, okay, we don't really need to spend a lot of money on these guys in free agency if there's a plethora of guys in the draft we can find later in rounds 3, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and just kind of, you know, fill exactly what we're looking for, but for cheap. So when you're talking about the Bengals wide receiver, beyond the top three that we assume are going to start for 2019, there's just nothing there that's proven, right? We have Josh Malone, Cody Core, Auden Tate, Alex Erickson. Erickson is at least extended because of his special teams ability, but Malone hasn't proven anything. He's kind of like the offense's version of Jordan Willis. You know, Tate is fun in certain situations as a niche player, but they're certainly not attached to him in any sense of the word. And I think we all have a similar opinion on Cody Core as well. So if there is an opportunity to take a guy who they believe can contribute early, and that's tough to say for receivers because they typically are the guys that, you know, take a year or two to really get acclimated into a system. But it's never a bad idea, I guess, because at the end of the day, you just want to draft good players. You just want to draft players that can become long-term building blocks for your roster. And especially when you're dealing with a position that has a lot of uncertainty, I just don't think it's the worst thing in the world. Now, I do believe that we should be under the presumption that, you know, they're going to do a lot of work to get Boyd extended before he enters free agency. I think, to your point, they might have learned their lesson from Whitworth in terms of getting AJ Green back on the books, because if they let him go, then the fan base might riot even more. So I think it's safe to say that at least one of those guys is coming back. But beyond that, again, a lot of uncertainty. And then you're dealing with a bunch of wide receivers who are 6'3", 6'4", running 4'5", 4'4", you know, speed in great downfield threats. Most of them are productive. So this class is really deep in that sense. And if they take care of their business from free agency and find multiple starters at positions of need, they have some luxury to maybe take, you know, this year's Jesse Bates, you know, because ultimately not a lot of people viewed safety as a big need for the Bengals, but they had other ideas. They wanted to move on from George Aloka. And if they find a receiver on day two or maybe early day three that can provide them something that they don't have and at least, you know, get some long-term stability in that position, it wouldn't be the worst idea in the world because that position is really deep this year and has a lot of talent, and there's just going to be a lot of good players from this class, and I don't think it's the worst idea to invest in that.
So we're going to kind of I don't think, unfortunately, Edward Valentine's going to join us. We're running a little bit out of time, and by the way, it is not on Ed. This was my fault because I had reached out to him kind of last minute and tried to get him in here. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to work out, but we'll get him on at some point in the near future too. Good guy and a big name through the SB Nation network. But we're going to kind of meld together listener questions with what the topic we're talking about, because we're getting a lot of questions about specific players in the live YouTube chat here. I see Will Smith, just two words and a question mark, Montez Sweat. Obviously tested well. I don't know if he's going to be there at 11. Is that somebody you look at?
I think he'll be there at 11.
Okay.
Because the first thing that I thought of with Sweat, and it's not an indictment on him, but it was Jordan Willis, and that's like the third time I've said Jordan Willis in this program. He has nothing to do with any of this that we're talking about, but there's a certain, when you're watching film on guys, you kind of have a sense of, you know, what they're going to test like, and Jordan Willis's film and his athleticism testing did not mesh at all, because I think he ran like a 4.5, had like a 6.83 cone, had explosive jumps, and you're thinking, there's no way this guy was the same guy on film. Maybe he just, you know, trained extremely well. And I think a similar thing could have happened to Sweat, because the dude is athletic on tape. He's 6'5", 260, and he has some good bend, and he's got some good snap jumping ability. But that 4.41, man, that just blew everybody out. It's like the fastest 40 from a defensive lineman in like 16 years or something like that. And it's not saying that Sweat wasn't athletic, but he wasn't that athletic. So I think it's a caution for people that maybe not completely buy into what he tested as, because now we know he can run that fast. Now we know that, you know, he has that ability, he has that gear in him, but is it going to show up on Sundays? Is it going to show up as a pass rusher? You like that he has that in his back pocket, but if he can develop that into some consistency, that would be fantastic. But as far as, you know, does that elevate him into the top 10? I think it's a little too early to say, because there's still Nick Bosa, there's still Josh Allen, there's still Brian Burns, there's still Rashawn Gary. There's still a lot of guys who tested well and already had that, you know, a claim as being a top half of the first round pick. I think Sweat's definitely in the first round, but top 10 might be a little bit too rich.
Seeing a lot of stuff from a couple of people about moving back in the draft. Especially if a guy like Devin White isn't there, maybe your boy Jonah Williams is not there. Is that something you see that is worthwhile? Or do you think they need to start thinking about moving up? This seems to be a deep draft at a lot of positions, but some not at the positions the Bengals need necessarily. I don't know.
I'm usually open to moving up, especially when you have 11 picks. But I think in their specific situation, it probably wouldn't be in their best interest. I think they're best suited to stay where they are, because, you know, people create these lists all the time. Like they talk about this player's not going to be there, this player's not going to be there, this player's not going to be there. And then you end up listing like 20 guys who aren't going to be there at the 11th overall pick. And you're thinking, okay, this is not the way that it works, and it's never how it happens. So there's going to be 10 picks before the Bengals. Two of them are probably going to be quarterbacks. If we're assuming that they're going to keep Andy Dalton for 2019, move forward with him, I think it's safe to say that they're probably not going to take one, even though they might consider a Haskins or a Daniel Jones if he's there. But then you're thinking, okay, that's eight non-quarterbacks that are going to be taken. There's more than eight elite prospects in this draft class, in my opinion, in terms of athleticism, in terms of production, in terms of tape. And I think they'd be best suited to find that, you know, that linebacker in a Devin White or Devin Bush, that pass rusher and maybe a Josh Allen, maybe an Ed Oliver, maybe a Brian Burns or somebody like that. I think that they need elite talent on this roster, because they have multiple deficiencies all over the board, and nothing really, you know, gets you back on track than getting that guy that you're sure that, you know, he's going to be on the team for 10 years. You know, you're going to be able to extend him, and he's going to be able to produce for a long time. And I think when you move back, then you're in danger of selecting Billy Price, and that's something that they should probably avoid this year. But I think they're best suited staying where they are, because they just need elite talent, and I think they're going to be able to find an elite prospect at 11 at, you know, a position that they could play early.
I think it was, let's see who it was, something, is it something Hayes? Basically, it's kind of something that has been asked, Chief Hayes, do you, you know, is this basically, do you foresee the number 11 pick being offensive lineman or linebacker? And if so, which one do you think wins out? Personally, I would say offensive lineman if it does come down to those two, because I think Zach Taylor, just offensive-minded guy, wants an offensive pick for his first pick, and he wants that passing game to work. That would be my guess if it had to come down to those two. I think most likely it comes down to those two, but there could be a dark horse. What do you think?
Yes, because last year was like between, you know, linebacker or center, because center was like the dire need, and what it turned out was that they've actually addressed that dire need. That's something that we weren't used to seeing, because they always attack premium positions earlier in the draft, and you know a position like center was usually addressed, you know, in the middle round or with an undrafted guy. So for them to go out and attack their biggest need like that, it was unexpected, and I think that could be a similar situation. That we see with the linebacker position, where you're thinking, you know, this is a position that they only, you know, take third, fourth round guys and try to plug him into, you know, make him the least priority because the pieces around them are supposed to help him out. But now you're thinking they have little to no depth at that position. They have complete uncertainty with Montez Perfect. Besides Perfect, they have, you know, Preston Brown as a free agent, Nick Vigil, who's going into the last year of his deal. He's not exactly proven to be tremendous in any way, shape, or form. So I think linebacker is in that similar position at center, where you're thinking, okay, it's not traditional for the Bengals and their traditional draft values to take a linebacker this high, but it could be in a similar position where they're just in such a dire need for one. And there's going to be either Devin Bush or Devin White available there. And I think either of those two would be worth the pick. And I think that both of those guys are the same caliber of prospects at linebacker that the top tackles are. And that'll be a healthy debate in terms of, you know, what do they value more? What do they need more with what they did in free agency? So, yeah, it's probably going to be between those two positions. I wouldn't rule out maybe tight end or maybe a pass rusher or a defensive lineman. I think those are going to be like the four big positions that they're going to be, you know, shuffling through, because ultimately no one drafts pure best player available, especially when you're picking 11th overall. You have definite, clear needs that on your roster that you need to address early. And I just think that linebacker could be in that similar position to center last year, where you're thinking, okay, they need to address one early, but they normally don't do it this early. But this could be just a different situation because of how big the need is.
Quickly, and then we'll start getting out of here, John. There was a couple of other comments and questions about Greedy Williams at number 11. That would be very interesting on a number of different levels, especially if the Bengals end up losing out on Darquez Dennard. You know, maybe they want to go that route. Is that something that's just, you think that's overkill at that position, especially given the needs at linebacker and offensive line? Or do you think that would be something where you go, hey, that's pretty cool?
Yeah, and I like Greedy. I just don't think that he's the cornerback that the Bengals should be looking for in terms of replacing Dennard. I think there's some intriguing options in the second or third round that could more aptly fill that nickel cornerback slot. Greedy is more that zone guy who doesn't like to backpedal too much, and he saw some of that uncomfortableness in his on-field drills at the combine. If they were to restructure Drake or Patrick and be able to move on from him earlier, I think he would be an upgrade over him. I still like, you know, the thought of having William Jackson here long term. So, like the cornerback that I was interested in, hopefully testing well, was Byron Murphy or even a DeAndre Baker, two guys that I think could easily, you know, move inside and cover the slot with ease. And that's ultimately what they're going to be missing when and if Darquez moves on to another team. I'm still hoping that Dennard comes back, because I think they can afford him. I think he's still a solid player, but I think in terms of what they'd be missing out with, what they'll be losing with Dennard, Greedy Williams is not the best player to fill that role. And even though I think he's a good player, I just think that he's not the best fit.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I think he also maybe does a little bit more on the outside,
right?
Yeah, than so much in the slot. But yeah, good stuff, John. Appreciate all the notes you had on a lot of those players there. This is the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. He's John Sheeran. I'm Anthony Cazenza. We're gonna get out of here in just a second. You can get this show on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play. You can get this show on the Megaphone platform, as well as on YouTube and CincyJungle.com. Any final thoughts, John, as we get out of here?
I'm very intrigued over the next week because we have heard nothing about any contracts given out to the Bengals free agents. We've heard nothing about Perfect, and we still know nothing about what free agency is going to be like. And that first 72 hours is going to be really crucial because it's usually the time where the Bengals are still on vacation and not concerned about signing anybody off the market. But you know, how much different, and this is something that we can talk about next week too, because next week will be the official start. But hopefully we get some contracts for either Dennard or CJ Uzoma or some other one of the other few veterans that have actually earned that second deal. But hopefully we start getting some news about that and gives us a better picture about what the next week is going to be like.
Interesting stuff from a couple of people, and I didn't really connect the dots until now, but I think it was Jay Peck in the live YouTube chat who said Juwan James, who is the tackle from Miami, and he was a former first round pick in 2014 by Miami, solid player hitting free agency, and guess what, he was there when Zach Taylor was there in Miami as an offensive assistant. So I don't know what it's going to take to get him in terms of money, but that is a name that's kind of a little bit under the radar because a lot of people are talking about Trent Brown and some other guys out there. That's a name that could be out there, and obviously there's some connections here. We keep pointing to Rams guys as potential connections, but a guy like that may be someone that Taylor looks at. Something to keep an eye on as we go into free agency going forward. John, thanks for everything. I'll see you next week, my friend.
See you next week.
All right. Thanks, everybody. This has been the Orange and Black Insider Bengals podcast. We'll see you next episode. Also, keep it to our feed because we will be updating some things on free agency happenings, departures, signings, all that stuff. So keep it here. Again, this is the Orange and Black Insider. We'll see you next time.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.